Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph, five lines down. Tanei Tana Kamei de Rav Nachman. We had a bright that was brought before Rav Nachman. Bizman Shadam Mitzaeret Aviv Vimo. The time that a person causes pain or difficulty for his parents. Mara Kodesh Baruch Hu, Yafeh Asiti Shlo Dardi Benehem. It's a good thing that I am not dwelling amongst them. Shemalei Dardi Benehem Tzaruni. Because if I was there, it would also cause me pain. This is a continuation of what we saw yesterday, that there are shlosha shutafim, there are three partners in the creation of a person, and therefore there's a equation of equivalence between the kavod and the morah that a person shows his parents in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And we even saw it to the point, like the Maharsha said yesterday, that giving kavod to the parents is akin to giving kavod to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And similarly over here, when one causes difficulty and pain to their parents, it's the equivalent of causing pain or difficulty to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to dwell or put his presence there in a case where it's going to cause him pain or difficulty because of that which the individual is doing to their parents. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Kol Ovir Avirah B'Seter, Kilu Duchek Ragle Ashchina. Person who does a sin in private, as if he's bumping up against the feet of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kiviyachol, Shenemar Kwa Mar Hashem, Hashemayim Kisi, Vahoretz Hadom Raglai, that the heavens are my throne, and the land or the earth is my footstool. So the imagery of bumping up against the feet of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is as if you're saying that there is no Kadosh Baruch Hu here, or you're not making room for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that is because this individual who sins in private says, I don't want anybody to see me sinning, but Kadosh Baruch Hu can't see me, that's why I'm sinning in private. It's similar to the Gemara in Baba Kama that describes the difference between a Ganav and a Gazlan. That a Ganav says, I hope nobody sees me, and therefore he steals in private, doesn't worry about a Kodesh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, the Gazlan says, I don't care if people see me, I don't care if a Kodesh Baruch Hu sees me. But at least there, he doesn't think that he's stealing without Hashem knowing, or he thinks that Hashem doesn't see this. And so that's why the Gazlan is treated better, in a sense, than the Ganav. And similarly over here, a person here who goes and sins in private is saying that I don't want anybody to see me, but I didn't know that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can't see me. It's as if he's implying that by doing this in private, because otherwise why would he do it in private and worry about people and not worry about a Kadosh Baruch Hu? Now, there are a number of corollaries to this. First of all, Tosafot quotes from the Gemara in Chagiga, which speaks about a person or an individual who has an urge to do a sin. Over there, there's a major machloket in the Rishonim as to the advice of the Gemara that a person should dress in black and then go to a city where they don't know him and then do the sin over there. Machloket whether the person should actually carry out the sin or these preventative measures so he doesn't carry out the sin. But it's clear that's what the Gemara is saying over there. It's better to do a sin in private than to do it in public because of the Chilul Hashem that happens in public. What we're speaking about here is an individual who's doing it in private because they don't want anybody to see them. But it's not coming out of a desire or uncontrollable desire where they think that a Kadosh Baruch Hu just doesn't see or doesn't pay attention to these things. That's number one. Number two is there is a tenuous connection to the previous Gemara, which is that generally when a person is mitzaer aviv v'imo, that's something that happens within the private domain of the house. And therefore, it's a corollary to that, which is that a person who does a sin b'seter, meaning that they disrespect their parents, or they are mitzaer their parents, that's something that happens in private and not in public. And so therefore this would be somewhat connected to that previous position in the Gemara. So this person is ki'ilu dochek raglei ashchina. And then the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, asur la'adam shi'alech arba amot b'kumas kufa. Person can't walk 4 amot standing straight up. Now this doesn't mean one's physical appearance, although sometimes people take it in that way also, that they should be bent over, there should be a humility or humbleness associated with the individual, both in their physical posture as well as the way that they approach life. Over here, it's more about the approach or the way the person looks at the world, that they can't walk around in a haughty manner as if there is no room for a Kodesh Baruch Hu there, as if it's all me and not a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Shenemar, Melo Kol Aretz Kivodo, that Hashem's presence, Hashem's honor covers the whole world, everywhere. And if you walk around with the komas kufa, if you walk around in this haughty manner and very focused on oneself, then you make no room for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's as if you're pushing Hashem out of that location and making it as if you are not acknowledging a Kadosh Baruch Hu's role in these situations. He did not walk around more than 4 amot with his head uncovered. Amar, Shechina lamala miroshi. The Shechina is above my head. So here, similar to the last statement, and here gives insight into the previous statement, the reason to wear something on one's head is because it's an acknowledgement of someone being above you, that there is a shilton, that there is a Kodesh Baruch Hu who governs our lives and who we have to fear. And therefore, one wears a head covering in order to indicate that. And the person who walks around with the Koma Skufa, as if they are denying the fact that there's someone above them. And therefore, these two are similar in nature. As far as covering one's head being an indication of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence there, we have similar Gemaras in the Gemara in Shabbat and Kuf Nun Vav, where the Gemara tells the story of an Amora who covered his head because once he had the Yarei Malka, he had the fear of a Kodesh Baruch Hu upon him. And again, the word Yarmulke comes from the fact that Yarei Malka brings the Shechina and the presence of the Shechina above the individual, so he acknowledges that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is above him and the guiding light in his life. And that prevented him from stealing, even though his natural tendency was to steal. And one time his kippah fell off, his head covering fell off, and right away he went to steal. And it was something that was so impactful on this individual that it prevented him from stealing when he was wearing the kippah. Now, as to whether this is an obligation or simply a good practice, from the Gemara over here, it sounds like this is a good practice. Doesn't necessarily sound that it's a normative halacha. We're going to see again on Daf Lamed Gimel, the Gemara is going to talk about head covering. We saw that on the Gemara in Chavtet. Gemara in Shabbat also has similar memrot, both on Kuf Nun Vav as well as on Kuf Yud Chet. And so, if you take that whole picture together, from the Gemara, it seems like that this is a Midat Chassidut. It's a positive, very worthwhile endeavor to wear a kippah, but it's not an obligation. The one who takes exception to that is the Taz, who believes that it became, or because of its acceptance through the bracha of Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Moter Yisrael B'Tifarah, which refers to a head covering, that it almost became obligatory and normative that a person has to wear a kippah. There are others who say that because of the minhag became so entrenched that the minhag became like a din. And then we have tshuvot from Rav Moshe and from others about the need or necessity to take off a kippah for work. We've discussed this back when we did in the Gemara in Shabbat, and we'll discuss it again when we speak about it on Daf Lamed Gimel as well. So, Sha'al ben al-Manachat et Rabbi Eliezer. There was this orphan who spoke to Rabbi Eliezer and asked him this question. Abba omer hashkeni mayim. My father says to give me water. V'ima omer hashkeni mayim. And my mother says, please give me water. Eze mehem kodem. Who do I give precedence to? In that both parents are asking for something. He obviously can't do it simultaneously. So then who gets precedence or who does he serve first? Amalei hanech kvodimcha, vasek kvodavicha. You should leave your mother's honor and take up your father's honor. Shatavim mecha chayavim bechvodavicha. Because both you and your mother are obligated in the kavod of the father. So this is otherwise known as the transitive property of kavod. We saw this before with regards to grandchildren and their relationship to the grandparent, whether that through their parent they also become chayavim in kavod, zkenehem, kavod of their grandparents. Here too, the child who is obligated in the kavod of the father and the mother who is also obligated in the kavod of the father, that gives the father's say or the father's needs precedence over the mother's needs. And therefore, if the son is faced with the choice between taking care of the mother or the father, he goes to the father first because the mother's also obligated to ensure that the father is taken care of as well because of the kvod aviv is paramount. Now, the Chazon Ish over here makes an interesting comment. He says that the conflict or question that this individual was faced with is whether to do something actively for the father or do something actively for the mother. So he has to do a kum vaaseh in both instances. He suggests possibly that in the case where the father asks him to do something and the mother asks him not to do it, then maybe it's better for him to do a sheva al taaseh. Maybe it's better for him to be passive and not violate the word of his mother and not be mekayim actively the word of the father. That's the Chazon Ish makes a suggestion like that. From our Gemara, it doesn't necessarily sound like that. It might be a little bit of a tzarchiyun because Our Gemara says that the mother is still chayevet in the kavod of the father. So the father's request to the son is not only an obligation on the son, might even bestow an obligation on the mother as well. And therefore, when she says not to do something, that's undermining that statement of the father. And maybe we should not give that credence in the face of the father's request. And maybe should Bekumba say, take care of the father. So then, Balifnei Rabbi Yoshua, Amar Lokach. He came before Rabbi Yoshua, asked the same question, and he got the same answer as he had gotten from Rabbi Eliezer. Amar Lo Rabbi, Nidgasha Mahu. If she gets divorced, what is the din? Amar Le, Miben Risei Necha Nikar Shebein Almanata. He says, from your eyelashes, I can tell that you are a son of a widow. So now, Rashi says the reason that he figured this out is because he must have cried a lot. And crying a lot has a physical impact on the eyes or the eyelashes. And therefore, he could see that this child had cried a lot. And therefore, he was clearly in a difficult position. And the nature of the question made it clear that he was a ben almanah, which we'll discuss in 1 second. That's the way Rashi explains the Gemara. We're going to see in a second, we'll read the Marsha, who does not necessarily like Rashi's interpretation over here, and explains the Gemara slightly differently. So, Atelahem Mayim B'Seifel, you should put the water into a mug or pitcher, V'Kakei Alehen Niketar Negolim, and then you can squawk for them like a chicken. The way Rashi answers it is that he answered him B'Lashon B'Dicha. He answered him in a joking manner because he felt that the question was not serious. Because here he is, a ben almanah. He's asking a question about a mother and a father in competition between them in requests. And he says it's not halacha l'maaseh for you because you only have a mother, you don't have a father. Now, obviously there are difficulties with that. Even if he was a ben almanah, why isn't the question a relevant question? And why shouldn't we take seriously the question because it has ramifications, even maybe not for this child, it has ramifications in other situations. Therefore, the Maharsha explains this Gemara slightly differently, both in questioning Rashi's approach. So he quotes the Perush of Rashi, and he says, "V'hu dachuk." It's a very difficult Perush. Kevin duluah yatzarich l'sheilot eile, lo'avela l'meimer abba v'ima, l'meimer aviv. He should have said, if one's father, rather than my father or my mother. So that's what the problem was over here, is that he was using the first person in asking the question, and he should have used the third person because it wasn't necessarily relevant to him. Then why in the first question did they also not realize that he was a ben almanah and answer the question? And why did Rabbi Yeshua all of a sudden recognize that he was a ben almanah? Maybe he was a ben alman. Maybe he was a case where his mother passed away and his father was still alive. Therefore, the Marsha says that from the first question, in his eyes, he also noted or knew he was an yatom. The question was, he didn't know if he was a yatom because his mother had passed away, or if he was a yatom because his father had passed away. From the second question, it becomes clear that it was that his father passed away, because he says that my mother got divorced, indicating that his mother was still alive. And that's how he knew that he was in ben almanah at that time. But the question was not about himself, the Marsha says, but rather about his brothers through his mother. His mother remarried after being widowed, and then was divorced from that second husband. And those brothers through the mother now were faced with that situation where the mother and the father were divorced, and now there was a tension between them because the mother had now severed that relationship with the father. She's no longer chayevet in the kavod aviv. So now the mother and father are on equal footing. The whole logic that we had before is that the mother has the obligation towards the father, therefore the son gives the father precedence. But in a case where that doesn't exist, and the mother and the father are making requests, what should you do? And then the answer was, you should just put it in a pitcher and let them work it out. I mean that you shouldn't get between them, or you should not be the one who has to deal with the issue. Rather, you should give it to them to deal with. You serve them, you do what you can do, you put the water, and let them work it out between them, and not you get between them in deciding which one goes first, the mother or the father. On the other hand, the Tosfot Riya Zaken over here says that he recognized that he was a ben almanah, not because of ben misei necha, meaning that because you cried, but rather he says over here, klomar mitnuotecha v'inyanecha, from the way that you present yourself, your character, nikar shipikeachata. that you are a very wise or clever young man. The ben almana pikeachu, why does that automatically identify him as being a ben almana? V'hu b'rov shetorach v'parnasato. That's because he was faced with the obligation to take care of the parnasa, meaning that when his father passed away, the obligation then fell to the child, and therefore he had to get involved in business and worldly issues much quicker or faster than his age or maturity. And because of that, it was recognizable through his way he conducted himself, his character, that he was wiser beyond his age, and that's how he knew that he was a ben almana. Then again, the answer then is given the question of whether it was really a joke, or was that really normative halacha. The way that Rashi reads it, it was a bdicha, was said as a joke. Another one, the way that Marsha read it, it was actually a real answer. That in situations where you can't win because both of them make requests and both of them you're obligated to serve, in that case, you just bring them enough water and let them work it out or take from that water so that you don't have to be the one that has to decide whether to go to the father or the mother first. Or the other way to read it is that you do whatever you want. I mean, since there is no decisive way to decide the loch over here, whichever one you do is correct, and it doesn't matter if you give it to the mother first or the father first, or you present it to both of them at the same time.
Doresh Ula Rabba, apitcha de ben siya. So Ula Rabba was Doresh at the entranceway to the house of the exilarch. Maidichtiv yoducha Hashem komal chiaretz, ki shamru imrei ficha. That they should give thanks to you, or acknowledgement to you, all the kings of the earth, ki shamru imrei ficha, because they heard the word of your mouth. Ma'amar picha lo ne'amar doesn't say what you said, ela imrei ficha, in the plural, that the multiple things that you said, only then do they give hoda'ah or acknowledgement to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. B'shasha amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Hashem was at Har Sinai giving the Aseret HaDibrot, says Anochi v'lo yelecha, he gives the first two Dibrot, Amru mot olam l'chvod atzmo hu dorish. The only reason that he put those Dibrot there is for his own benefit, like any other king would do. Any other king would demand that people respect him, that they do proper kavod and yirah towards them. And therefore, when he gave the first to Dibrot, it's not surprising, because that's what any other king would demand. Then, afterwards it says, Kevin Shamar Kabedet Avicha Vetimecha, when it says that, you should give honor to your parents, Chazu Veodulu Mamarot Arishonot. Then they came back, and they acknowledged that the first Mamarot were not just about the Kavod of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because over here he demanded that Kavod be given to the parents. So therefore, they were not being just Doresh Kavod Atzmo, rather, he was giving out a system of laws that involved giving thanks and acknowledgement to the people who provide goodness to you. One of those is your parents. One of those is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's not just about me. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, you must honor me like a melech basar v'dam. But rather, it is a part of teaching the individual the proper hakarat tov, the proper way to act towards individuals who have taken care of you and provided for you. Rav Amar Mihocha. Rav says you can learn it out of this pasuk. Rosh tvarcha emet. Rosh tvarcha v'lo sof tvarcha. The first of your words and not the end of your words. So what is that? Rosh tvarcha v'lo sof tvarcha? Only the beginning of your words are true, not the end of your words are true. Elam isof tvarcha nikar shrosh tvarcha emet. But rather, from the end of your words, it becomes clear that what you said originally was true. So he's saying the same thing in a different way, which is that anochi v'lo yelecha. People were skeptical about it. Then when they heard Kabedet Avicha Vetimecha, the latter words, then that made or gave more credence to the first statements of Anochi V'lo Yelecha. Now even though, truthfully, the word Sof Tvarcha never appears in that Pasuk, nevertheless the Marsha says if you look at the continuation of the Pasuk, you can see from this, V'nir Lorin Demar, the Sefer Dekar Kasamich. It relies on the latter half of the Pasuk, Dichtiv, Olo Olam Komishpat Tzidkecha. It says that in always the righteous laws of your Torah, lefish mitzvah kibud avim, mitzvah sichlit nimusit. That is because the mitzvah kibud avim is a mitzvah sichlit, or what otherwise would be called natural law, something that is obvious and understandable in terms of laws, that people, even without being commanded to do that, should come around to that and understand that. It's something that should be practiced and is practiced by many different nations. And therefore, Kabedet Avicha is mentioned by the latter half of the pasuk in talking about mishpatei tzedekecha. But the mishpatei tzedekecha in the latter half give credence or a stamp of approval to the rosh tvarcha emet, to say that the first of your words are true, which is anochi Hashem lokecha v'lo yelecha, similar to the idea that Ula Rabba mentioned before, that it's not just about the korban of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but rather a system of laws that is trying to teach an individual a proper conduct and a proper way to relate to individuals, to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and not about just the king saying, you must honor me. Baminei mirav Ula. Areichan kibud aveim. They asked the Rav Ula, how far does kibud aveim go? Or in other words, how do you accomplish kibud aveim? How far does one have to go for this? Amar lahem, uviru'u ma'asah uvei kochavim echad be'ashkelon. Go and see what one non-Jew did in Ashkelon. V'dama ben Netina Shemo, Dama ben Netina, his name, he's been made famous now by all the children's books that include these stories about Dama ben Netina. Pamachat bikshu chachamim prakmatia v'shishim ribo schar. At one point, the chachamim wanted to do some business transaction with him that would have included 600,000 zuz of profit. V'ya mafteach munach tachet m'rashutav shel aviv. And the key was under his father's pillow. And he did not want to get the key because it would have woken up his father, and he didn't want to wake up his father out of kibud aveim. Now Tosafot makes a point over here that the Gemara in tomorrow's daf is going to argue about whether a child is obligated to do kibud aveim out of his own money or only out of the money of his parents. So now, according to that mandama that says he only has to do it out of the money of his parents, not his own money, then why was Dama ben Netina obligated over here to give up this profit or to allow his father to sleep? So Tosafot over here differentiates between profit and monetary loss. Had there been monetary loss, then in Hochanami, he would have woken up his father, should have woken up his father to get the key to prevent it. But over here, it was just foregone profits. And the foregone profits, even according to the one who says that you do not have to give of your own money to provide for your parents, you do have to forego profits in order to take care of your parents. That's one way to explain it. That's the way Tosafot explain it. You could also just indicate that this was l'fnei mishurat hadin. And this individual went so far. I mean, that here we're giving someone whose paradigm of kibud aveim, and look at to the extent that he went. Not necessarily that is the halacha in this instance, but he went that far, al chakam v'kama, that we should emulate his type of behavior. So then, shalu et Rabbi Eliezer, ad heichan kibud aveim. So they asked the same question of Rabbi Eliezer, how far does kibud aveim go? Let's go see what this non-Jew did in Ashkelon for his father. Again, the stories about Dama ben Netina, whether this is the same story just enhanced, or whether it's a completely different story is not clear over here. The Chachamim wanted to buy one of the precious stones that they needed to fill in the Eifod, for 600,000 zuz. Rav Kahana matne b'shmonim ribo. And Rav Kahana says it was 800,000. Now that's the profit, not just the underlying cost. The key was under his father's pillow, and he did not want to wake him up. And another time, whether that means the next year, or it means at a later date, Kodesh Baruch Hu paid him back in kind. There was a para duma that was born into his flock. Nichnasu Chachmei Yisrael Etzlo, the Chachmei once again came back to do business with them. Amar lehem, yodani b'chem, shimani mevakesh mekem kol mamon shvalam, etem notnim li. No matter what price I dictate over here, you're going to give it to me because you want this so badly. El enian b'vakesh mekem lotu mamon, shivsadit b'shvil kvod abba. I'm only going to take payment on that which I lost when I gave kavod to my father, and I didn't wake him up to give you the stone of the ephod. And therefore, he only asked for the 600,000 or 800,000 he lost then, even though he could have made much more. He saw this as being a Kodesh Baruch Hu's reward to him for keeping kibud aveim. Here's an individual who's not commanded in kibud aveim, and yet he still does this. Someone who is commanded to do this, meaning that the Jews are commanded from the Torah, kibbeit avicha v'etimecha, certainly they should keep this to this extent. They should see this paradigm as an example of how they should conduct themselves with regards to kibud aveim. Dama Rabbi Chanina, gadol mitzuveh ve'oseh, mishimi she'eno mitzuveh ve'oseh. Greater is the one who is commanded and does than the one who is not commanded and does. So over here, the Tosfot Riha Zakein says, mishnei she'mitzuveh mekabel marut ha'mitzvot alav. Because the person who does that, he accepts the authority of the individual commanding it. Someone who does it voluntarily is not necessarily accepting the command or the rulership of that individual because they volunteer to do it. Just like they volunteer to do it, they can volunteer not to do it. So it's not a clear acceptance of the marut, of the auspices of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the other hand, one who's commanded and follows the command, that is an acceptance of the command of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Tosfot over here gives a different reason, which he says, that Godo HaMetzuvevos, and here at the Einu Taimah, Mishi Metzuvevos Adif, Fish Do'eg U'mitzta'er Yoter Pen Ya'avor, because he worries and is pained about the fact that he might violate it. Because he has the back door out, which is that he always can say, if I don't like it, I can leave. When someone voluntarily engages in that, I'll say this slightly differently than the way Tosfot said it, but I think this is the way that Tosfot meant it, which is that when a person does this voluntarily, just like they do it voluntarily, they can walk out voluntarily, and therefore they never feel the pressure of having to comply and do the mitzvot, because if they don't like it, or if they don't feel like it, they can always walk away. On the other hand, the person who's mitzvah ve'olse is in a position where they must abide by this. And therefore, there's a yetzer hara to not abide by it, and to not listen to that what a person says, or if I don't feel like doing it, then I just walk away. But when I walk away, that has implications and that has impact on me. And so because of that, I carry a much larger burden, both in terms of the yetzer hara not to do it, because I'm compelled to do it, as well as the fact that I'm worried about doing it because I am commanded to do it and I must do it. The way that the Rambam phrases it is that the reward is just not as great. That's what it means, gadol. Greater is the reward of the one who's commanded and complies than the reward of one who volunteers and complies. And that's what it means, gadol, over here. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that the whole point of doing the mitzvot is for the benefit of the individual, somewhat akin to what the Tosfot Riya Zakein said, which is that it shapes the persona of the individual in their listening or following the Tzivoy Hashem. Slightly along the lines of what the Ramban says with regards to Tamei HaMitzvot, over there he also speaks about the fact that it's Mitzareif, it affects the individual, and it improves the individual. But that's only true where you are accepting the Marut of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you are following the orders of HaKadosh Baruch Hu when you're commanded to do so. And therefore the mitzvah has an impact in that case, because your following of the mitzvah demonstrates your acknowledgement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the true ruler or dictator over what you do, as well as the fact that since you're commanded to do it, it has an impact on improving the individual or bringing the benefit that is embedded in that mitzvah. On the other hand, if you're not commanded to do it, by voluntarily doing it, it doesn't show any acknowledgement of the rulership or control of HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the individual or over the world. And in addition to that, maybe it doesn't provide those same benefits because HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't command this individual to do it. So if they do it, maybe it has some beneficial side to it, but it's not going to be as beneficial as the one that Hashem specifically commanded to do such an item. So Amar Rav Yosef, Rei Shava Amina, Manda Hava Amar Le Halacha K'Rav Yehuda. At first, I used to say, whoever tells me that the Halacha is like Rav Yehuda, Damar Suma Patur Min HaMitzvot, it says that Suma, a person who is blind, is Patur Min HaMitzvot. Rav Yosef, who fell ill in the middle of his life to a serious illness that caused him to go blind, as well as forget much of what he had learned beforehand. And again, we have many examples in Shas where his student Abaye is reminding him about what he said before he fell ill, as well as the fact that Rav Yosef is also known as a Bucky and Targum throughout Shas, because of the fact that when he went blind, he no longer could learn Torah Shebichtav because he couldn't read him in Mitoch HaKtav. Therefore, he became a Bucky in Targum. So Rav Yosef was a Suma, he was blind. Rav Yosef, Rav Sheshet, we have other examples of this. And it says here that if you tell me that a Suma is Pater Mitzvot, I mean the Loch is like Rav Yehuda, Vidna Yom Tov L'Rabbonon, I'll make a big feast, a big party. Because I'm not commanded to do the Mitzvot, and yet I'm doing them anyway, I'm voluntarily doing them. That should be greater. Now that I heard Rabbi Chanina says that Gadol HaMitzuveh V'Oseh, Yoter Mishen HaMitzuveh V'Oseh, that it's greater is the one who's commanded to do and does, rather than the one who does it voluntarily. Adarabba, just the opposite. Ma damar li dein aloha k'Rabbi Yehuda. The one who tells me now that aloha is not like Rabbi Yehuda, that assumes chayav in mitzvot, then avidna yom tov l'rabbonon. I'll make a party for the Rabbonon. Now, over here, the Tosfot brings the Rabbeinu Tam. He brings it here very in short form. But he says here, medaktek Rabbeinu Tam, the nashim mevarchot o mitzvot aseh shezman grama. From here, the Rabbeinu Tam wanted to learn that women who voluntarily mekayim the mitzvot are allowed to make a brocha on a mitzvah asei shazman grama, which they voluntarily do. Because even though they are p'turot the gamrei, and there is no obligation, not midoraita, not midorabanan, they could still make a brocha over here. And it's not a problem of loti sat shmo l'shav, because you can prove it from what Rabbi Yosef said over here. Originally, Rabbi Yosef thought, if you make all the mitzvot voluntary for me, which is that you tell me that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, that suma is patur min a mitzvot, I'll make a party. Tosfot says, well, if that was mafkia him, if he only voluntarily did the mitzvot, it was mafkia him from the mitzvot, and therefore he would not be able to make a brocha, why would he be excited? He would have lost the ability to make a brocha on all the mitzvot. So why would he have been so excited about such a prospect? Must be that that's not an impact of him becoming voluntarily chayav, quote-unquote, in the mitzvot, rather than doing it because of obligation, and being making the brocha wasn't a difference. And from there, the Rabbeinu Tam wants to say that whether you're chayav or padur in a mitzvah, if you voluntarily do the mitzvah, you have a right to make a brocha on the mitzvah, even though you're not a shir kiddishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu about that particular mitzvah. From that, he wants to prove that women should make a brocha on mitzvot aseh shazman grama, which they voluntarily do, which is the psak of Ashkenazim. The Sfaradim don't paskin like this Rabbeinu Tam, and they follow the shita of the other Rishonim, or the Sfaradim Rishonim, like the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, who say that a woman who does a mitzvah aseh shazman grama voluntarily should not make a brocha. This comes up many places in Shas. In other places in Shas, the Tosafot rejects this explanation of the Rabbeinu Tam, because you could differentiate between a Suma and an Isha. By the case of Isha, the Chachamim didn't have to put in impositions vid the Rabbanan, because she's Chayevet in Mitzvot in other places. On the other hand, if a Suma is Patur min Mitzvot, he's Patur the Gamri, both Midoraita and Midrabanan, then he would be nothing. He would have nothing that makes him Jewish at all. And therefore, there might be an institution mid the Rabbanan that he be chayav in a mitzvot, and that's what might precipitate the bracha for the Suma versus that which is by a woman. And they make that distinction in order to negate this proof of the Rabbeinu Tam. But the Rabbeinu Tam has other proofs from other places in Shas as well, where the Gemara seems to discuss these issues, and we seem to think that when it comes to voluntarily doing a mitzvah, that nevertheless you're still allowed to make a bracha in such a case. Yata Rabbidimi, Amar Pamachat Aya Lavush Sirkon Shel Zahav. There was one time where this Dama Ben Netina was wearing a fancy silk robe that was inlaid with gold. Vayoshev Ben Gdoli Romi, and he was sitting amongst the political elite. Ubata Imo V'Karato Mimenu, and his mother came and ripped it off of him. V'Tapcha Lo Arosho, and then she slapped him on his head. V'Yarkolo B'Fanav, and then she spat at him. V'Lo Yechlima, and he did not embarrass her. You can see in Tosafot that Yesh b'midrash hayta miturefet midata, that his mother was out of her mind. Clearly, what she was doing here was not a normal type of behavior. And nevertheless, he did not embarrass her. He let her do whatever she did. And then he took care of her. The Yushalmi has a more extensive story by which her shoe slipped off or something happened while she was doing this thing, and he returned it to her and he helped her to get dressed. I mean, that this Dama Benetino was not just a one-time event. This was his whole persona that he gave kibud av ha'im, that was both to his father and his mother. And even after his mother was out of her mind and did these things that embarrassed him in front of the political elite, he still took care of his mother, and he did not embarrass her because of what she had done. Tani av yimei brei d'ravi avau. Yesh ma'achil aviv pisione. There's someone who feeds his father pisione. I would say loosely pheasant. It's a type of bird or good food. Vitor domino olam. And he ends up losing his olam haba for that. V'yesh matchino b'rechaim. And there's sometimes a person makes him work the mill, and despite that he makes him work the mill, he is mevi'o l'chei olam haba. With that, he brings him to olam haba. So here, what the Gemara is trying to point out, we'll explain the stories in a second, Tosafot and Rashi both bring the background to these stories, which is that it's not objectively what you do for the parent that makes it into kibud av ha'im or not, but it depends on the context and the circumstances. And sometimes kibud av ha'im comes from the fact of the way that you approach it or the subjective nature of what's going on. And that's what the Gemara says over here. Sometimes you can be feeding him the delicacies of the world and end up not doing kibud av ha'im. On the other hand, other times you can make him work and you are doing kibud av ha'im. And so here, Tosafot and Rashi quote from the Yerushalmi that the story here was a case where the son was providing all these delicacies and all these wonderful things for his father. And then, when his father asked him, where'd you get it from? He says, what are you worried about? Just keep chewing and enjoying it. So it made it sound like he wasn't enjoying this, or he didn't feel good about what he did for his father, or he made his father feel bad about what he was doing for him. And therefore, even though he was feeding him all these delicacies, he didn't treat his father properly. He didn't address his father in a proper manner. And so because of that, even though he was doing objectively the right thing and making his father and giving to his father, nevertheless, it was negative because of the fact that he didn't address his father. He didn't present it in a beautiful manner. On the other hand, the case where a person puts his father to work on the mill, and that is considered to be kibbutz avim, is a case where the government came in and says, we need you to come work on our mills. Now, when the government comes and makes you work on their mills, that can be endless, that can be backbreaking work, they can embarrass you, they can do all sorts of things with you, and the son says, listen, I'm going to go work for the government in your place, and then you take over the mill here in the house so that we have parnosa. So over there, where he's making his father work, but first of all, he spoke to him in a nice manner, and he treated him nicely, and he's also, in this case, taking off backbreaking work from his father and leaving him with some less backbreaking work. So in that case, he could get Olam Haba. So again, even though the objective look here, where he's making his father work, doesn't look like kibbutz avim, but contextually, and because of the way that he addressed and spoke to his father, it made it into kibbutz avim. That's important because that tells you that the kibbutz avim is not just the purview of the rich. The kibbutz avim all has to do with the circumstances in which you find yourself, and every person has the ability to perform kibbutz avim in their situation, in their subjective context. Amar Rabbi Yabal, Kigon Avimei Berit. Yabal says, like Avimei, my son, Kayem Mitzvat Kibud. He was Mekayem Mitzvat Kibud Avim. Chamisha Bnei Sam Chayavile Avimei Bechaye Aviv. So he's already older, you can tell, Avimei. He already has five children that are Smuchin, that are Rabbanim, and including Avimei himself, who seemingly was also Samuch. And yet, Bechayav after Rabbi Yabal, Rabbi Yabal used to come to visit, Kari Abavo, when he used to knock on the door, Rohit Azul Paltakle, Avimei himself jumped up to answer the door and open the door for his father. Vamar in. And on his way to the door, he would say, I'm coming, I'm going to open it. Adamatairatam, until he reached the door. So you see here the tremendous kibbutz avim that Avimei paid to his father, Rabbi Abo. Number one, he had five children who could have done it. Not only could they have done it, they could have done it as shlichim. If he sends a shliach to do it, it's also kibbutz avim. So number one, you see from this, that better you do it than have someone else do it. But in addition to that, you see Avimei's tremendous commitment to his father and to the mitzvah of kibbutz avim. Despite having children, he ran to do the mitzvah, which also sets a example for the children that come after him of how to treat one's parents. Yom Echad, Amalei Ashkayan Mayo. One day, Rabbi Bo asked his son Avimei to bring him some water. Adaitilei Namneim. By the time he got there and brought the water, his father had dozed off. Gachin Kayalei Adidar. Rav Yimei stood there, bent over, holding the water until his father awoke from his snooze. He didn't wake up his father to give him the water. He didn't just leave the water there. He stood there waiting till his father awoke in order to give him the water. So, Istaya Milta. Something good happened out of that, which is, while he was waiting there, and he wasn't just having idle thoughts, and he wasn't angry at his father, rather he was plumbing the depths of Tehillim. And in doing so, he got a tziyata dishmaya that he was able to understand the tehillim of Darash Avimei Mizmor Le'asaf. He was able to be Doresh the Mizmor Le'asaf. Rashi over here brings two possible interpretations. One is that he's Doresh the whole tehillim, that whole perek in tehillim of Mizmor Le'asaf. Or, he says an alternative explanation is that he was Doresh just that pasuk of Mizmor Le'asaf. Which is, why does it say over there, Mizmor Le'asaf, that it's a shirah to Hashem from Asaf, when the continuation of the pasuk is there, Bo goyim benachalatecha, that the goyim came into your possession, they destroyed everything that was there, why is that a mizmor? It should be kina li Asaf. And therefore, he brings the drasha that is also found in Midrash Eicha, with regards to Megillat Eicha, that kila Hashem et chamoto v'yatzet esh v'tzion, that Hashem allowed his anger to go out on the stones and the wood of the Beit HaMikdash, and not in Klal Yisrael. And that is the bracha. We say that in the keynote as well on Tisha B'Av. The fact that Hashem destroyed his Mikdash really spared Klal Yisrael. And so to over here, Mizmar Le'asaf, the Mizmor is that Hashem allowed the Goyim to come in and destroy and take over his Nachala, but not to ruin or destroy B'nai Yisrael in the end. And therefore it is a Mizmor, therefore it is a Shirah. Those are the two interpretations that Rashi brings down. Tosafot here brings a similar explanation, but then brings an additional explanation, which is, Ach yesh bid midrash, she'asaf amar shirah, al shetav'u be'eretz she'areha. That this mizmor was said about the fact that the walls of Yerushalayim, when they came to lay siege on Yerushalayim, sunk into the ground, and basically let them enter into the city. That it could be both real or figurative, which is that Kodesh Baruch Hu made it as if the walls sunk into the ground and they're able to overcome the walls, because when a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants there to be defeat, or he wants them to breach the walls of the city, it's as if the walls fall down or sink into the ground and allow the enemy to enter. But is Asaf was a descendant of Korach or B'nai Korach, and then Mizmor was the fact that now that there was something else in the ground, meaning the walls, then Kodesh Baruch Hu will have to bring the walls out of the ground. He'll also in that will also pay attention to others that are found depths of the ground, like the B'nai Korach, and he'll bring them up as well. And Tosafot here brings a mashal of a well where a shifcha goes and tries to draw water and her bucket falls in, and nobody really cares about it because it's this little wooden bucket. Then the princess comes and she puts her golden bucket in there and falls in. The shifcha gets all excited because now that the golden bucket's there, everybody's going to fish it out, and while they're fishing her bucket out, they'll get the shifcha's bucket as well. So similar idea. Now, in terms of contextually, the explanation of Tosafot, as the Marsha points out over here, is much more continuous with this sugya here about Kibud Avim. Because over here, Asaf is giving kavod, or speaking about his relatives. He's a descendant of Korach, and he's saying through this that there's a benefit to his relatives. Marsha says over here, it was midah keneged midah. Mishum dekayim av yimei mitzvah kibud av, zachal lahach drasha shedarash shamar Asaf mizmor mishum kibud beit avotav. Habluim shidlu im ha-shiarim. In Rashi's explanation, it doesn't really follow through. It happens to be that this happened because of an action of Kibud Avim, but the interpretation itself is not. There are others who have a girsa here that he came up with 13 different ways to explain Mizmor Liasaf, and if that's the case, that both the interpretation of Tosfot and Rashi could be right, because there could be multiple explanations of it over here. Amalei Rav Yaakov Baravua Abaye. Rav Yaakov says to Abaye, Kagon Ano, Dada Tina Mibei Rav, when I come back from the Beit Midrash, I'm away for a while, Abba Madli Kaso, my father pours me a cup, Dima Mazgalit, and my mother also pours me something to drink. Hechi Avid. Now I'm in a bind because I have these two cups that I need to drink, and my parents are both offering me to drink. What should I do? Amalei, Mimech Kabil, Mevuch Lo Tegabel. Accept it from your mother and not from your father. He came into Bar Torahu, since your father is a Tamar Chochom, Chal Shadate. He will be a little offended if you take it from him because he'll think that you're okay with a Bar Torah or Ben Torah serving him. So because of that, you should give precedence and take it from your mother. Now this is all, this is clearly a subjective consideration because if his father would be offended by the fact that he didn't take it from his father, then he'd have to take that into consideration as well. And maybe he should take from both of them, drink a little bit from both of them. They're both trying to honor him. And sometimes the Kibud Avim is not about what you do for your parents, but what you accept or allow your parents to do for you. And that's being demonstrated over here, that his parents both wanted to do something good for him, and he's trying to figure out if he accepts from one, he's going to offend the other, and which one is it better to take from. So Abaye suggests that he takes it from his mother, not his father, because his father was just doing it out of etiquette, but not because he really wanted to accept it from him. Because if he accepted it, Chal Shadate, he would have been a little offended by that. So Mitarfon had a elderly mother or mother, the Chol Ema Tahava Boy the Mesak the Purayo. Anytime she wanted to climb up onto her bed, the beds in those days were not close to the floor, easy to get up. You usually had to climb a ladder or upstairs to get into the bed. So he used to gochin, the salikla, he used to bend down and let her use him as the step stool to get up to the bed. And every time she wanted to descend from the bed, nachtat ilave, she used to descend on his back. Ata become mishtabech be-midrasho. He came to the Beit Midrash, and he was so pleased by his kiyum of Kibud Avim. Amrilei, adayin lo igata the chatzi kibud. You haven't even reached halfway point of doing such kavod. Klum zarkar naki befanecha leyam, velo ichlim lata. Did she throw your money into the ocean and you didn't embarrass her? Meaning that there's even more to do in terms of Kibud Avim. Yes, what you're doing is tremendous, but over there at least it has utility. And there's something positive comes of it. It's not a case where they're just, she's throwing your stuff away or wasting away your assets and you still do not embarrass her. Here you're doing something that's at least helping her. And here Tosafot brings from the Yushalmi an additional story about Rabbi Tarfon, which is Pamachat Avda Pazmake Dido Bechatzera. She lost her slippers that she usually, or shoes that she usually walked with. And she came out of her bed to look them, find them. And Rabbi Tarfon put his hands under her feet. And she walked. He carried her feet out until the chatzer in the mud, until she could find her slippers so that she wouldn't have to walk on the ground barefoot. So now again, another extreme form of Kibud Avim that was performed by Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yosef, Kavashama Kalkara Dime, when he used to hear the footsteps of his mother approaching, Amar Ikum Mikame Shchina Da'atyo. Let me stand up before the presence of God that is now coming to me. Again, this is going along the lines of what we saw at the end of yesterday's daf, that there's Shlosha Shutafim Ba'adam, and that the parents and the Shechina are partners or a single unit in the creation of the individual, and therefore when a mother is approaching, it's the equivalent of the Shechina that is approaching at that time. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ashrei Mishlo Cham'an. Lucky is the one who has never had to experience them or doesn't have parents. Rabbi Yochanan, Ki Avrato Imo Meit Aviv. That when his mother conceived him, his father passed away. Yaldato meita imo. And when his mother gave birth to him, she passed away. V'chein Abayi. And Abayi had the similar story as to Rabbi Yochanan. Now Rabbi Yochanan is saying this because of both the difficulty in being Mikayim Kibud Avim. It is such a difficult mitzvah in order to be Mikayim Kibud Avim. And number two is, if you don't do it properly, and you don't take care of your parents, you're going to be punished for it. And since it's such a high standard, and he didn't feel he could keep up to the standards of Rabbi Tarfon, we can see in Rabbi Shmuel as well, that they held the Kibud Avim in such high esteem that they did these unbelievable things. Rabbi Yochanan didn't know if he was capable of that. And if he was capable, the demand in Kibud Avim is so high, or the threshold is so high, that it's almost impossible to keep it, and then you're going to be punished if you don't keep it. Rabbi says, Ini, is it really true that that happened to Abaye? Amar Abaye, Amar Liyim. You see throughout Shas, the Rabbi says, Amarliim, my mother said, and he says the advice of his mother. So, hai, virabinite havai. That was from his nurse or foster mother that brought him up. So, his nurse or his foster mother brought him up. He called her aim, even though she was not his biological mother. And therefore, when Rabbi is making quotes in Shas, it's not from his biological mother, because his biological mother passed away when he was born. Yosefot over here also brings a story from Rabbi Ishmael, which is very interesting. That Rabbi Shmuel, when he used to come back from the Beit Midrash, his mother used to wash his feet when he came back from the Beit Midrash, and then she drank the water with which she washed his feet. He got wind of this, and then he refused to do this anymore because he didn't want his mother drinking the water that she had used to wash his feet. So he refused to have his mother wash his feet anymore. She comes to the Beit Midrash and starts complaining about her son that he is not allowing her to do what she wants to do and to take care of her son. And they say to him in the Beit Midrash, "V'tzivalo shenichena lasot v'tzona ubinyan zehu kibud," that they should let her do what she wants to do, and that's a form of kibud. Again, that's what I mentioned before. This idea that kibud avim is not always in what you do for the parents; it's sometimes in what you allow the parents to do as well. If this is what she wants, and this is the kavod that she wants to give you, then you have to allow that to happen and not stop your mother from doing this, because that's also a lack of kibud avim. Even though he was only stopping it because he felt it was incorrect or it was improper for this to be done with his mother. But she desired it so much that that became the Kibud Avim in this case. She had this elderly mother. Says, can you get me some jewelry? He took care of her. He says, I want to marry a man. Can you find me someone to marry? I'll go out, I'll check, I'll search for a man for you. Bina Gavro, the Shapir Kavatach. I want somebody who is good-looking and as great as you are. So then, Shavka v'azel the Arad Yisrael. He left her behind and went to Eretz Yisrael. As the Gra brings over here, Miturefet Haita. That's what the Aleph of the Gra, that she was out of her mind. The fact that she was asking for a man just like her son, when she was ages, she was much older than him, and it was not a reasonable request. So at that point, Ravasi felt that he couldn't keep up with his mother anymore because she was making unreasonable requests. And therefore, she leaves to Eretz Yisrael. Shama the Ka'azla Batre. He heard that she was following him to Eretz Yisrael. Ata the Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan. Amralei, ma'u latzeit me'Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. Am I allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Chutz La'aretz? Seemingly here it is to go greet her or to take care of her when she was coming to Eretz Yisrael. Could argue that it was to escape if she was coming to Eretz Yisrael that he was leaving to Chutz La'aretz. Amralei, asur. He says it's not allowed. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Likrat ima mahu. If I'm going to greet my mother, what is it? Amalei eni yodea. Says I don't know the answer to that question. Itrach purta. He waited a short time. Hader ata. He came again and asked Rabbi Yochanan. Amalei asi nitratit. Let's say. He says I see that you really want to leave. Hamakom yazircha l'shalom. You should return in peace. So now the way Rashi turns it over here is that Rabbi Yochanan thinks that Rav Asi wants to go back to Chutz La'aretz because he's going to go live there, and that he's had enough here in Eretz Yisrael, and he wants to go back home. He did not realize that it was about leaving for his mother. So for Ayash, the Tolok Sorel Mekomo B'Vavel. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan over here was hesitant, and then when he let him go, he says, okay, you can go, but Makom Yazircha L'Shalom. You can see that in Tosfot Zvi Yazakin as well. He says, Chashav, Shlo Ayah Rotze L'Chavod Imo, Elosh Rotze L'Chzor. He wasn't doing this out of honor for his mother, but he really wanted to go back to Bavel. Rabbi Yochanan was giving him permission to go back to Bavel. Many others disagree with this Rashi and say that that was not the case. Rabbi Yochanan realized that it was for his mother to go back, and therefore he was hesitant in letting him go back, maybe because he knew the story. Others question the interpretation of the other Rishonim as to then, if he was just going back to greet his mother, then why was Rabbi Yochanan hesitant? Because what Isser is there to leave Eretz Yisrael in order to greet one's parents, or to take care of one's parents? I mean, that if he was just going back to live in Bavel, we know from other Sugyot and Shas that there's an Isser to leave Eretz Yisrael. And because of that, Rabbi Yochanan was hesitant to let him go. In the end, he let him go, and we're going to see that Rav Asi was a little uncertain as to whether Rabbi Yochanan was sincere about that. But according to the other Rishonim's interpretation, what was the issue? So some claim that he was a Kohen, and therefore there is an added Isser for a Kohen because of Tumat Chutz La'aretz, and that's what he was concerned about, whether Kibud Aveim trumped that Isser or not. But you have to come up with an explanation as to what the hesitation was if it simply was to go to see his mother. And that's why Rashi, and you can see the Tosfot Ari HaZaken say that, Rabbi Yochanan didn't understand that it was about going to see his mother. He thought he was really leaving. After the Kamei de Rabbi Elazar, he goes before Rabbi Elazar and says, After Kamei de Rabbi Elazar, Malei Chas V'Shalom, Dilmar Mitach Ratach. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan only let me go because he was mad at me and he just said, go, go. Amalei, Maya Amar Lecha. So he said, what did he say back to you? Amalei, Amakom Yazircha L'Shalom. Shem should bring you back in peace. If he was really angry at you, he wouldn't have given you a bracha. In the end, he hears that his mother passed away and that she wasn't coming alive. She was coming in a coffin to be buried. Had I known this, I wouldn't have gone out to greet her. Now, it sounds like over here that he only found out about this later on when he went out to greet her to take care of his mother, that she was already passed away and come in the coffin. But we know from the upcoming Gemara that there's an obligation to honor one's parents both in their lifetime and in their death. So why over here is he saying, though, well, had I known that, I wouldn't have gone out. So you see from this, and the Tosfot Ri HaZaken says from this, you can see this, Shein Zeh Mikvod Shachar Mita, that this is not one of the kvod, the things that you have to honor your parents after death with, is to go out to greet their coffin. There are other things that you have to perform in terms of kavod, but that's not one of those items. Or it's not significant enough that it should override the issue of leading Eretz Yisrael, and that's why Rav Asi was a little bit remorseful about the fact that he had left Eretz Yisrael and then found out that his mother had already passed away.
Tanurbanan, mechabdo bechayav, mechabdo bemoto. Person has to give kavod to their parents both in their lifetime, even after they pass away. Bechayav keitzad. How does one give kavod to their parent while they're still alive? Hanishma v'devar aviv lemakom. If there's a certain place where people will listen to something because it's quoted in the name of his father, Yolo Mar Shalchuni Bishvilatzmi, don't say that you should send me for my own purposes or because of what I'm saying. Miharuni Bishvilatzmi, speedily I should go because of what I'm saying or for myself. Patruni Bishvilatzmi, let me or dismiss me because of myself. Elakulu Bishvilaba, but he should do it in the honor of his father or in the name of his father. Maybe that if he's going before the city council and asking them to send him on a mission of some sort, or he's being told to do something on behalf, he should do it on behalf in the name of his father and not in the name of himself. Bimoto ketzad. How does that work when he passes away? Ayomer davar shmuam bipi. If he's saying something over in his father's name, lo yomar kachamar abba. He should not say, this is what my father said. Ela kachamar abba mori. That's what my father, my master said. Harini kaparat mishkavo. I am a kapara for his death. Vahani milei tok shnei machzor chodesh. That's within the first 12 months of death. Mikan ve'elech omer zichrono livracha lechaye olam haba. So here the Gemara differentiates between the first 12 months and afterwards. This is not a commonly known thing that people should not say about a parent or about an individual, zichrono livracha or zichrono tzadik livracha,
in the first 12 months. Rather, Harini Karparat Mishkavo is the proper expression that is used by the Gemara here in the first 12 months. As Rashi notes here, it's the same reason why we only say Kaddish for the first 12 months. We don't say it the last month because an individual is Nidon only in the first 12 months, or the person, a Rasha, is Nidon again in the 12 months. For the case of Kaddish, where we don't want to be machzik the individual or a Rosho, therefore we only say Kaddish for 11 months and not in the 12 month. Whereas when it comes to Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo, we say that throughout the 12 month period, because there's no indication through that is deeming them to be a Rasha, because it's an expression not about directly trying to elevate them out of any predicament that they're in, but rather an expression of taking, because of the covet of their father, anything that would come to their father. Rashi here has a pretty extreme view about what Hareini Karavat Mishkavo means. He says, I lie bakol ara levui al kol nafsho, that all bad that is supposed to happen to him should come upon me. Now that's, first of all, a serious undertaking to say such a thing. Number two is that there are circumstances in which an individual would not want to say that, or would not be prepared to undertake such an obligation of being responsible for all the bad and all the things that are supposed to happen. Now you could look at that as more of an expression of kavod, not necessarily that you in reality want to take on all the bad, but an expression of kavod that you're willing or you want to spare them any difficulty and therefore you want to take some of that upon yourself. If you look in the Gemara in Yevamot and Daf Ayin, over there, the Mishnah, the Gemara there brings a quote similar to this of Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo. And over there, it's clear that that cannot be the definition of Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo. And so there, you have to explain it in a much looser way, or in a way that is an indication of kavod, or reverence, or maybe even of sadness about that which has transpired. But not exactly or as harshly as Rashi explains it over here. It's also important to note here that the whole purpose of saying Hareini Mikabarat Mishkavo, or as according to this, saying the Kaddish for those 12 months minus one for a parent, is in order to bring a schut to the parent. And therefore it's something in general where a person in their life should make a change to the positive in honor of their parents. And that at the death of a parent, this is whether a man or a woman, they should do something or take on something in their life which they change in honor of their parent, because that will be a zechut to the parent if you make that permanent change. There were those that feared or had an issue with the fact that if you said Kaddish for 11 months, then in many places the person shows up to Minyan for 11 months, and then after that they disappear, they don't come to Minyan anymore. So there was a posek in America who was rejected by major poskim in Eretz Yisrael, including Rabbi Avadji Yosef, who said that you should come and say Kaddish for 12 months instead of 11 months, because that way at least the person comes to shul and does that mitzvah and comes as the schut for the maid for the 12 months. In the case where they only say Kaddish 11 months, they're going to not come in the 12th month. So he thought it was kedai to do it for the 12 months. Despite that fact, the poskim say that it's not the case because we don't want to be machzik anybody as a rosha, and that's a serious issue. But nevertheless, from that, one should take to heart the fact that the whole purpose of doing these things and saying Kaddish is to provide a schut for the mate. And therefore, when you're in a predicament where a person's parents, chas v'shalom, pass away, then they should do something that is a schut for their parents, but to make a change that's permanent. That if they start to come to Minyan then, that they should continue to come to Minyan even afterwards. It shouldn't just be a temporary thing that they do. Obviously, it's important to say Kaddish. Obviously, important to daven for the omot. But it's something besides that that should persist afterwards. And that's something both men and women can do. Has nothing to do with coming to Minyan or saying Kaddish. Now, in terms of saying things over in his father's name, it's clear that that's only a kavod when they're going to listen if he says it over in his father's name. If he says it over his father's name, they're not going to listen. It's not only not a kavod, it's a gnai to his father. So that is, again, something that's subjective, that he has to know whether the people of the area or in this political setting will be more apt to respect his father's name. And therefore, it's kedai for him to mention it in his father's name, or that the mission should be done in the name of his father, or whether to say it in his own name, because it would actually be the detriment to mention his father's name. In addition to that, the Tosafot Rei HaZaken over here limits this requirement to say something over a shmua bipiv of your father only when it comes to divrei Torah. And he says here, Dvar shmua, halacha sheshama maviv, vadai ein hadin biimo, sheinu chayav lomor kach, lo kapara, lo zichrono, elok shomer dvar halacha. This whole idea of saying Hareini Kaparat Mishkavo, or saying over halacha, and saying that all this that we are speaking about now is all in divrei Torah, and therefore it's only relevant by his father and not by his mother. That's exactly what the context of the Gemara is. When you're saying over a Shmua, you're saying over Divrei Torah, or Davar Halacha from your father, you have to express it in this way. If you're just saying over mundane matters, there's no obligation of kavod in this manner. So you see here from the Tosfot Ariyazakei, number one, he limits it to a father who taught him Torah, and number two, to a matters that revolve around Torah and Halacha. There are many other Rishonim and Poskim that believe that this has broader context, and that it's meaningful in anything that he says over from his parents. Obviously, if it's a matter of value, or a matter that is meaningful, then to say it over his father's name, and to have that expression of already Kaparat Mishkavo, Zichrono Levracha, said about them in any of those contexts. But here, the Tosfot Ariyazakei, based on what the Gemara says, limits it to Divrei Torah. Tarabanan. Chacham mishaneh shem aviv v'shem rabo. The Chacham who's speaking changes the name of his father and the name of his Rebbe. Turgaman enu mishaneh lo shem aviv lo shem rabo. On the other hand, the Turgaman, the one who is, again, the loudspeaker, the one who says over the drasha from the Chacham to the people, he does not change father's name or his Rebbe's name. Avu adaman, whose father are we speaking about here? Ilem avu adam Turgaman, if it's the father of the one who is broadcasting this to the people, Atu Turgman la bar chiyuvo. Why isn't he chayav in kibur aveim? So why is he allowed to say something over in his father's name and say his father's name when he's also chayav to give honor to his father? Elam Rabo shem aviv shel chacham, shem rabo shel chacham. We're speaking about the father of the chacham and the rebbe of the chacham. Kihad the mar baravashi. As we know by this example of Mar, the son of Ravashi, Kavadorish bepirka, when he used to give the drasha in the main drasha, whether it was on Shabbat or before the Moadim, Iyu Amar, when he was whispering to the Meturgaman who was going to broadcast, amplify this to the people, he would say, Abba Mari, he would say, my father, my master, or Rebbe Mori, he would say, my Rebbe, my master said this, Vamure Amar, but when the Meturgaman announced it, he would say, Hachi Amar Ravashi, this is what Ravashi says. I mean, that since he can't say his father's name directly, or his Rebbe's name directly, when he says it over to the Meturgaman, he says over Abba Mori or Rabbi Mori. On the other hand, when the Meturgaman is speaking, who's not bound by that, he can say over Ravashi, or he can say over whatever the name of the father of the Rebbe is, because he is not the child of that individual, he's not the Talmid of that individual. Therefore, it's only binding on the individual who is the Rebbe or the child, but then when you say it over, you can replace Abba Mori or Rabba Mori with the proper name that's there, whether it's Ravashi or wherever it is that he's saying it over in their name. Okay, we're going to stop here about the two dots on the bottom of Lamed Aleph, Amud Bet.